Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Foreman joined in studio by James Gagan, TD Fine Gael at Dublin Bay South. Senator Laura Harman of Labour, of course, emanating from the Cork South Central, Cork City Southwest area, but senators do not have a constituency. They are nationally representing us. And Rose Conway Walsh, Sinn Féin, TD for Mayo. Good morning and welcome, one and all. We want to talk about Pascal's departure first. Took us all by surprise. James, did you have any intimation?
Good morning, Pat, and good morning to your listeners. No is the short answer to that. I think, look, there's no question. It took us all by surprise, but I suppose, you know, not just within Fine Gael, but generally, I think there was always an expectation that Pascal would end up exiting politics to lead somewhere on the world stage. And, you know, I said earlier in the week that Ireland's loss is the world's gain, but he's going to be a huge loss internally to our party, because maybe there's parts of his personality that maybe people out there don't know as well, which is that he's a great mentor to young people entering politics. He's a great believer in public service, encouraging people to enter public
service. Are you losing ballast, a bit of gravitas in your party now?
Well, I think, you know, what Pascal did when he took over essentially from Michael Noonan over a period of 10 years was that he continued what had been built up in terms of the management of the public finances to ensure that we have a sufficient amount of revenue to fund our public services while at the same time maintaining the number of workers we have in our economy now, 2.8 million people. So what he's left us in rude finances.
Okay, he may have done, but Jack Chambers, his partner in crime, if you like, is overspending in all the departments to the tune of 4 billion.
Well, I think ultimately the position that Pascal has done over 10 budgets and indeed Fine Gael and the success of governments is to ensure that we do maintain that balance of having a fiscal prudence on the amount of monies that we are saving to deal with future events that may occur. And we saw that with Brexit. We saw that with the pandemic, how Ireland exited those in comparison to other European countries. We have
Rose.
To keep
right.
that going.
Okay, well, first to say on Pascal, obviously I think Pascal will be missed in politics. I marked Pascal for a while in public expenditure. I found him very affable and I really do wish him well. He also had what I would say is probably impeccable manners, which carried him a long way. Now, in our relationship, I suppose we, as I said yesterday in the Dáil, we disagreed agreeably. So I would disagree in terms of his legacy here. First, in relation to the overall economy and where we're at. Like, we have run, if we were taking out the foreign direct investment, we're running on a deficit for several years. In terms of our investment in infrastructure, we're behind and the figures speak for themselves again. So we had the National Development Plan review in 2021. There was a commitment there to spend 5% of GNI Star on major infrastructure projects. That never happened in any year. Also, I just think in terms of what's presented in the economy at the moment, our over-reliance there on FDI leaves us in a very precarious situation. If we just look even in terms of regional imbalance as well, this morning I've just got figures from the Northwestern and Regional Assembly to say that unemployment in the region has gone up to 6.1%. Now, that is very, very concerning. Then we look at what's underneath if we lift the bonnet in terms of separating the economy from society, and we see that the social contract is broken in so many areas. So that's a very worrying thing, whether it be in health, in housing and many other key things as well. So I think, you know, the picture of the economy and society that is painted, I think we need to look under the bonnet and see what's really happening in people's lives.
Laura, you're nodding your head.
Yes, well, I mean, I agree with Rose. I think the social contract is broken in terms of, you know, where we invest economically in the country. And we know that there are people listening today who are struggling with the cost of living, struggling in terms of housing, in terms of healthcare. So there is a huge opportunity now in terms of finance, in terms of the new finance minister, you know, to address this. But I think there's no other way of putting this. I mean, I think, you know, Pascal's departure is a big loss for Fine Gael. It's a big loss for the government. And I think we need to ensure that there is stability there in terms of finances. And I want to wish Pascal well. But look, there will be a by-election. And I think there is a huge opportunity there in terms of opposition parties, in terms of winning that seat. And I think Fine Gael, you know, will be up against the wall as well in relation to that.
Yeah, well, just to come back to something Rose said, I mean, Rose, when she was giving her analysis of the economy, if you take out foreign direct investment, I don't know why you would take out foreign direct investment.
Well, you would take it.
The most important pillar of our economy. And I notice, as ever with Sinn Féin spokespeople, they never talk about the people working in the country.
James,
they never talk about the number of jobs.
An interesting stat, though, that I heard this morning earlier, that employment has gone up. It's crept up again. But there is a certain cohort, maybe those without a degree, for example, who are, their unemployment rate is rising slightly. And there is an increase in jobs in the over 65s, for instance.
Well, you know, we've tried to rebalance the economy, particularly in terms of apprenticeships. And, you know, that was something that Simon Harris started when he was Minister for Further and Higher Education. But ultimately, you know, what do you look for in terms of the management of finances? I mean, what you look for in terms of the management of finances is that you're generating enough revenue to fund public services. If things go bad, like they did in Brexit, like they did in the pandemic, that when you come out of those situations, that you then are in a position of strength, that you can retain people's jobs and you can keep people working. But what are we trying to do now over the next 5 years? Is we're trying to fund public services, we're trying to maintain the economy, and we're trying to direct the most important amount of monies that we possibly can to build homes in this country, enabling infrastructure.
See how all of that works out, because investing in infrastructure takes time, and there's planning permissions and all the rest of it. So you put the water in, you put the power grid in, you bring it up to speed, and then you start to build the houses. I mean, I'm not sure you can do it all in what's left of your term.
Well, I think what you know, you're going to...
I think it's disingenuous of James to say that we don't appreciate foreign direct investment. Absolutely. It is critical to our economy. But we have to look at what the drivers of foreign direct investment are in terms of our water, our sewerage, our housing, and all of those things that have been neglected. So I would say that, you know...
Why was the opposition so critical of the government deciding to prioritise these elements in the budget?
But they didn't prioritise foreign direct investment. They should have done it years ago. They should have done it when they promised they would do it, as I said, in 2021.
You just said we were too dependent on foreign direct investment. But you just contradict yourself immediately.
No, sorry, James. We have to have, for the sake of people who are dependent on jobs and trying to survive in this country, we have to have an honest conversation. Yes, there's over 300,000 people employed in foreign direct investment.
In your county in Mayo, there's a very important foreign direct investment that creates
houses of jobs. Will you just please, for 1 second? It is critical that we have competitiveness in this country, that we look after the drivers of foreign direct investment. That doesn't mean to say that we set aside indigenous businesses and small and medium businesses. Like, for instance, in the budget, we should have done a PRSI VAT rebate for businesses to help businesses that are really struggling as they are at the moment. But like education, like decarbonisation, like housing, all of those things have been neglected. So the government cannot say, well, we are the masters of foreign direct investment and not look after the drivers.
I think one of the biggest threats to our economy is housing, and I think we really need to solve the housing issue, and it has to be solved with this generation. I think my generation and younger, we've had the rug completely pulled from under us. We can see security vanishing in front of our very eyes when it comes to cost of living, when it comes to housing. We can't have a whole generation of pensioners who are renting in the future. It won't be stable. We have the highest outward levels of emigration since 2015 of young people, and we need to promote the value of migration as well. In terms of people coming here.
If they go to Australia, they're not going to find the housing affordable either. That's the truth of it.
But they are.
They're renting over there as they would be renting here.
We're losing very few workers.
Buying. There's more young people in my constituency, or in the immediate barony of Erris. There is more young people between the ages of 20 and 28 in Australia than there is at home. And that is an absolute
and
fact.
The living is good. I was in Australia earlier this year. If I was 20, 30 years younger, that's where I'd be. Yeah. I'd be enjoying life to the full. There's no question about it. But trying to buy a house in Sydney is virtually impossible.
Well, they want an Ireland to come back to, and they want to be part of creating that new and united Ireland to come
back to.
Absolutely.
And we are losing teachers and healthcare workers. We're losing Gardaí as well, who see a better life on other shores. We need to give them a life to look forward to here.
I want to look at the challenges facing Pascal. this morning we were talking about Trump's peace plan for Ukraine, and one of the pillars of that is that the World Bank develop a program to rebuild Ukraine. Not the United States, but the World Bank. Straight into Pascal's basket, if you like.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Yeah, it will be one of his challenges. And obviously, I heard him say during the week that he would be in charge of policy as well. So he has a critical job to do. He's a critical job to do in terms of how he presents that, in how he deals with poverty in the world as well, in terms of the mass movement of people, mainly because of poverty, because of climate change and all those. So I really do wish him well with all of those challenges that he has.
The US is the biggest shareholder. There are 189 countries in the World Bank. Only three are not. Cuba, Liechtenstein and Andorra, I think, are not. So the US is the biggest shareholder at 19% of the equity, if you like, of the World Bank. So we'll have to say, Mr. Trump, I don't agree with you. We're not doing that for Ukraine.
It's a huge organization.
Is he a man who could do that?
I think there's 40,000 people work in the World Bank, and you know, Pascal's going to be the number two there. But I mean, look, in terms of Ukraine, I mean, we all hope for peace in Ukraine. And I think what we've seen from the European Union response, you know, we do have a very different view from the United States in many respects and how they've responded to the Ukrainian crisis, particularly under the new administration. I think the European Union united have tried to balance some of the, you know, internals that are taking place in the United States. And it's so important that Ireland, as a member of the European Union, continue to play to that strength, and that Ireland continue to contribute in sizable amounts to the non-lethal aid to support the Ukrainian people. And we have to continue to show our resolve, because I was in Estonia and Lithuania recently enough. I mean, if you're in those parts of the world, Eastern Europe, there's 100 million Europeans living on the eastern flank, and all they think about is morning, noon and night is the threat of Putin, you know?
Yeah, what do we all make of the ship? The spy ship, which may be making its way into our waters.
Yeah, it certainly is worrying. And it certainly exposes us as to the failure of successive governments to invest in our defence forces. And that is, I now welcome the fact that there is increased investment in our defence forces, but we are behind the curve, and we're behind the curve, particularly in the underwater surveillance that we need to do. So we have challenges ahead, and you can see what the British are doing.
Now, you supported, as did you, Laura, Catherine Connolly's elevation to the presidency. Mm-hmm. She's not a woman for armament, as you know.
I think she will make a great president.
No, if you'd be precise on her attitude, yeah. I mean, she was criticising Germany for a fairly modest increase in its armament, and she compared it to the Nazi era of the 1930s. I mean, that was an extraordinary contribution, and one can only imagine if that is extrapolated into her attitude towards maybe allocating more money to the Irish defence, she might not approve.
No, I think that Catherine Connolly would see the neglect of the defence forces here and ensure that we had proper investment into the defence forces.
I think
forces.
We need
I have
to
no
ensure
doubt whatsoever on that.
Retention of workers in the defence forces as well. And we've been very clear, you know, in the Labour Party that we want to see a review of paying conditions and pensions in terms of the defence forces. These are workers. We need to absolutely value them as a country. And I think it is very worrying for people, you know, at home listening about, you know, they hear about this ship that is coming into our waters or close by our waters, not knowing what it's doing, what capability it has in terms of spying, in terms of interfering with data, in terms of communications here. We need to be on top of that. That is a risk. And I do think we need to, you know, we do need
but
to treat
nothing,
our defence workers properly.
All we can do, as the former Chief of Staff, Admiral Mellet, said this morning on News Talk, all we can do is watch and report. And then you report to the government. And we had this from a former commander a naval commander from the Irish Defence Forces yesterday. All you can do then is report what you see, what you believe they're doing to government, and then it's up to the government to do something. Now, what is this government going to do to fill it off?
Well, I think it's a huge opportunity for the new Minister for Foreign Affairs as well, you know, Helen McEntee, to step up and address this issue on top of it as well.
In fairness, and Rose did acknowledge it, I mean, we are seeing record levels of investment in the Defence Forces to the extent...
We're going to have to borrow kit for the presidency of the EU when it comes to us later next year.
Well, defence right across Europe, sadly, because of what Putin has done and because of what Russia has done, has come to the forefront of every European country. And, you know, I spoke earlier about how every day, and if you're in Estonia, Lithuania, this is what they're thinking of. In Ireland, it comes up from time to time when issues like this arise. But I think, you know, it is really important as a country that we stay united on the importance of investment in defence and cross-collaboration when it comes to defence. But that we can do all those things while maintaining our neutrality, which I think Irish people are incredibly proud of, and holding on to it. I think we're really proud of our peacekeepers.
I mean, no one wants us to join NATO for the simple reason that without any kind of nuclear deterrence, if we would be a target for long-range missiles from Russia, we would be the softest underbelly of Europe.
Yeah, there's nobody who wants us to join NATO, and there's nobody that I'm aware of in politics in Ireland that's proposing such a thing. What we want to ensure is that Ireland remains a friend and a neighbour within the European Union, that we can show solidarity in the way that we can through the provision of non-lethal aid.
But we're depending on the generosity of others to keep us going. I mean, we're depending on the RAF. We're borrowing some sort of kit for the presidency next year to keep the European leaders safe when they're here. I mean, it's very inadequate.
And I would just say that the budgets haven't even been for next year for the European presidency. We had members of An Garda Síochána in last week into the committee. The budgets haven't been agreed yet. We're just way behind in this. I am very concerned about next year and about us to being able to accommodate and ensure everybody's safety here. I do hope that would be the case, but it will take cooperation, but it will take rapid investment as well, and planning. And we need to the people who are tasked with doing this, we need to let them get on with their jobs and do the best job that they possibly can.
We feel a bit like the Skippering Eagle keeping an eye on Moscow at the moment. But there are domestic affairs which bother us. And the school secretaries and caretakers dispute, Laura, I mean, it does seem on the face of it, given that we're having the new pension plan coming in the new year, that it seems ironic that we're fighting over pensions for people who've been doing the work for years and years.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's really disappointing to see that talks, you know, have potentially broken down again. And we need to ensure that these workers are protected. They shouldn't be treated as second class. They're vital in keeping our schools running. They're deeply respected.
I mean, I understand the history of it is that many of these activities used to be part time, but that has changed. I mean, there was a time, if you'll pardon me referring to your job as senator, when being a senator was seen as a part time occupation and was not particularly well paid. But it did have a little pension attached, which the caretakers and secretaries did not. So what are we to do? Because the knock-on effects will be quoted again and again.
Yeah, so they need to be treated equally in terms of pay, in terms of conditions, in terms of their pensions. Further education spokesperson, Owen Kenny, and myself have been very vocal on this issue. And, you know, we need to ensure that these talks are there. They can't be treated as second class. They're vital in terms of our school communities, keeping schools open. I mean, this morning it was freezing cold. They were probably the ones helping to clear the ice coming into schools. Everybody wants to see this resolved, and it's vital that it happens. And
there were people on the picket line getting telephone calls from teachers saying to the school secretary, where's this? Where's that? Where's the other? Can't find this. Can you help me? And they were, you know, they were obliging even on the picket line.
Yeah, and I mean, I met them in Mayo. I went out and stood with them in different parts of Mayo. I really do not want to see this happening again, that they have to, that they're forced to go out and strike. Now, this is the first challenge for Minister Nocton, and she needs to do this, but it needs to be done within days.
James?
Rose says, I mean, none of us want to see them out on the pickets again. And I met all of the secretaries from my own local schools that came out to Leinster House. I'm a parent of two young children. They're currently in national school with another one to follow. We all know, like you said, Pat, it's changed completely. The importance of secretaries in schools and caretakers is just overwhelming. Schools, a lot of schools just simply can't survive.
So what is the obstacle to sorting this out?
Well, it's currently in the WRC Labour Court processes. I'm not going to sort of insert myself into that. As I understand, what has happened is that the talks have broken down in the WRC, and the procedure then is that it gets referred to the Labour Court, and it's now going to go before the Labour Court. And from what I saw this morning, the Department of Education have given a very clear statement that they want a meaningful outcome, but they can't deliver on a meaningful outcome without the support of the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform as well. And
but what is your understanding of the obstacles to sorting this out? Is it what I'm saying is precedent? You give it to one cohort, another cohort will be queuing up saying, we want the same.
Well,
or is it to do with the, if you give people who've only a short amount of service, for example, and you try to give them a pension, it'll be worth nothing if, even if you give them...
The minister has been very clear that she wants a meaningful outcome to this. I mean, what I've read from what Forsa have said is that the reason it's gone to the Labour Court is that the issue of pension parity for people who have worked for many years, that that issue has not been resolved. The place to resolve these issues, as I say, and the Minister for Education needs the support of the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform in order to deliver on this. But the forum to resolve these things, like all industrial relations issues, is in the Labour Court, and we want to see a positive
outcome.
It is,
and we certainly do. But it was an absolute commitment in the programme for government that this would be sorted. So it shouldn't be batted between one minister and the other. The programme for government was a collective agreement, a commitment, and that commitment was to the schools and to the secretaries and caretakers, and that must be carried out.
I want to see it fulfilled.
You know? Yeah, and I think, you know, the new minister, you know, Hildegard Nocton, needs to step up here and, you know, deliver in relation to this. And as I say, it was a commitment from the government, and certainly, you know, we stand with these workers in terms of the Labour Party, and I know the unions are negotiating on their behalf, but I think nobody wants to see industrial action again here. We need to make sure that there is a resolution.
And for Hildegard Nocton, she needs an early win. So, you know, politically, it'd be good for her to have an early win. Okay, moving on to the Donald. All sorts of stuff over every single day. We could do an entire program on Donald Trump every day. The latest thing I've seen is he posted an AI-generated video of himself playing soccer with Ronaldo in the Oval Office. Meantime, he's on Truth Social threatening six Democrats with execution.
And he'd love if you did a programme on him every day. I think that seems to be his character, and it gets more and more outrageous. I do think the more pressure that he comes under, the more he seems to be losing control, and losing control particularly of his MAGA support. It seems to kind of get more and more outrageous. But I think the question that people are asking is, where is this going to stop? And I mean, his latest thing of you know, committing people to death because of what they're saying. And this is the advocate. I really want people to think this, because I hear it sometimes, people saying, oh, free speech, Donald Trump, free speech. Like, it couldn't be further away from somebody being able to express an opinion.
Like free speech for him and for people like him, but no free speech for six Democrats.
I think one of the things that somewhat surprised me, but it maybe reinforces that, you know, time never stands still in any politics, is that, you know, there seems to be a lot of internal tumult going on in the Republican Party. It seems to have been the case that it was a lot of the female members of the so-called MAGA movement that really rebelled against Donald Trump when it came to votes in relation to Epstein, and two of the Republican women themselves have been the victims of sexual abuse, and they wanted to see more transparency with this issue. And we saw with the recent elections, you know, the winds of change are blowing through the United States right now. And even if you look at how Americans are feeling about the economy, they're not feeling very happy with how the economy is being run in latest polls. And that could have a knock-on positive effect, hopefully, in the future to Ireland in terms of how they're managing their tariff policy. So these are all things that we need to keep
an eye
on. Yeah, I think the only thing predictable about Trump is that he is unpredictable and he's liable to say anything. And I think there is a clear strategy there. I mean, he's a lot cleverer, I think, than people would think. And he's consistently pushing boundaries in terms of what he says. And I mean, you know, threatening death on Democrats in terms of things that they've said. I mean, that is extremely worrying. It's dangerous. It's a threat to our, you know, democracy.
He keeps losing cases in the courts. He's been told now to take the National Guard out of DC. He keeps losing and he keeps appealing and so on. It just goes on and on and on and on, and eventually exhausts people.
I mean, I think one of the things that maybe isn't commented on enough is the question of the rule of law. I mean, there was a horrific analysis done of a French judge in the Court of Human Rights, who is essentially being subjected to sanction by the United States administration because of how the International Criminal Court, pardon me, because of how they're dealing with yeah. the Palestine case. I mean, it is horrendous in terms of how the rule of law.
And they're on the human rights list, a watch list of countries where your human rights might be denied. In the few seconds we have left, Laura, have you booked your tickets to Prague?
Not yet, but I think it's extremely exciting for the country and it's really lifted us. So, you know, in the Labour Party, we say we need to invest more in football. It's good for communities and it's good for the nation.
Rose. Yeah, I'm really concerned about the price of the flights and all that. I mean, they went up 200%. The price gouging that's gone on, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah, Michael said, though, that you were laid on 15 extra flights. Yeah. They'll be empty coming back. They're one-way flights.
They will,
so therefore,
but you know what I mean? There's really loyal fans who would really like to go there and they're going to be priced out of it, of going there.
Yeah. So
I
mean, is the government going to subsidise you all going to Prague?
Well, I mean, I saw that apparently there might only be 5% of a 20,000-seater stadium tickets given to the Irish. 900, I think you could see 10,000, notwithstanding the prices, you could see 10,000 Irish people in Prague with 900 seats. So there'll be some party over there. Well, but
the
it
bars
is a shame.
Are very welcoming in Prague,
yeah,
that's for sure.
It all is right. bringing joy.
We leave it there. James Gagan, TD for Fine Gael in Dublin Bay South. Senator Laura Harman of the Labour Party from Cork. Rose Conway-Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo. Thank you, one and all. That's all we have time for today. Don't forget our items are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to the team, editor Emer Bradley, senior producer Claire Darmody, producer Niamh Dunn, researchers Keen Burns and Ella Anderson, broadcast assistant Amory Kane, Cormac McDonough on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.